Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Well, look who the cat dragged in. Back and, well, doing fine, thank you.
Hey, Steve, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
So you got us a little nervous there, man.
Oh, stop, please. I'm nervous. Iron Man, that's what they call me. Crank this up. I am live from my house this morning. And it's not the Allstate Showcase Studio, but it's got a couple of windows in my office. So if you come by, if you come by my yard and, like, you know, go to the, what would it be, the north side of the house and stare in the windows, it's kind of like the same thing as the Allstate Showcase Studio.
Do you need us to come and put the temperature down to, you know, make it freezing and dim the lights too?
Mm-hmm. Make it feel like home?
Yeah, why not?
What are you wearing, Steve?
Yeah, I think the bigger question is, do you have a bathrobe on or
something? Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Pajamas?
No, I got dressed for work. I put sweats on.
Yeah, all right, there you go. Back in the saddle, baby.
Baseball hat, sweats.
Wanted to go with the same fashion trend you know me for. I was in the hospital for a couple of days last week. I'll explain that with Dr. Most coming up. And it's important that we all learn from Steve's little adventure. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But you want to do the top six at six? Who's up for the top six at six? Raise
your hand.
Okay, here we go.
Now it's time to move on to a little something we call...
The Steve Cochran Show presents the top six at six.
That's the best number I've heard yet.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
Six.
Lucky guess.
My favorite number is six.
The top six at six on 720 WGN.
Well, your president of the United States says he's going to mostly stay quiet. Wait, actually say that. He's mostly staying quiet after Friday's Republican massacre. Listen, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to say it right now. It's not all Trump's fault. What?
No.
Yeah, it's not all Trump's fault. This is a huge, calamitous collection of crap for the Republican side of things. They'll try to bring up health care again down the road, but your Obamacare stays in place. And Dr. Kevin Most will be with us at his regular time at 6:40 to try to explain what that means for your health care going forward from a provider's standpoint. We'll talk about my stuff at 6:20. Next! Let's go live to Dave Ennett at the site of the Final Four. Where's the Final Four this year, Dave?
Glendale, Arizona, Steve.
Let's go live to Glendale, Arizona, where Dave is standing by. This Final Four, is this interesting, or is this something that is going to make CBS want to jump off a bridge?
No, I think it's very interesting.
Oh, it
is. I like this match. And Gonzaga, you know, it looks kind of looks like they had their toughest game against Northwestern.
Yep.
In that second game out in Salt Lake City, and they look very tough. First time they've ever gone to the Final Four, they've been one of those programs that everybody said, well, they kind of fatten up on a weaker conference schedule and they build this big record and they can't get to the Final Four. Well, they got there this time and they're playing another Cinderella, really the Cinderella team in South Carolina. So I think that's a really interesting matchup. And North Carolina lost in the championship game last year and then they win on a buzzer beater, basically 0.3 seconds yesterday. So I think it's a couple pretty interesting matchups next weekend.
Gonzaga, North Carolina for your final?
Gonzaga, that's certainly how it looks, but you can't write off the South Carolina team. They're really scrappy. They play great defense.
Their head coach is nuts.
Their head coach is absolutely nuts and a really good coach, and I think it's going to be a fun game to watch.
The head coach used to be a bar bouncer, and he is just bananas on the sidelines.
Yeah,
he's kind of fun.
Frank Martin. Yeah, he's done a great job with them, and you know, Oregon's a solid team going against North Carolina, but North Carolina lost on a heartbreaker last year, the championship game. So I think it's going to be a fun Final Four.
Do we all have our Final Four still alive?
No.
I have three of my four.
What? Andrea's in great shape.
Mm-hmm. I'm in good
what?
Shape.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Have you checked the...
I have
no one in America has three of those four teams.
Oh, I do. I put initially Florida, Oregon, Gonzaga, and North Carolina. So I have Oregon, Gonzaga, and North Carolina.
Holy mackerel.
Oregon, Gonzaga,
what kind of voodoo are you dealing in?
I don't know, but I'm
next. Never ask a question you don't really want the answer to. We'll get to this a little bit later in greater detail. But CBS Sunday Morning sat down with Sean Hannity, and Ted Koppel did the interview. And Sean Hannity said to Ted Koppel, "Do you think I'm bad for America?" You know what Ted said? "Yes. Yes, you are." So Sean Hannity is very upset about that. Oh, that's a shame. Next. The lost episodes of Mr. Rogers have been found. A bizarre week of Mr. Rogers shows that goes back to the 60s that tries to teach kids about the nuclear threat from the Soviet Union in the old Cold War. I'm not even kidding. It's a scary day in the neighborhood. Duck under your desk, Timmy. Next. United Airlines in a spandex war. They're not making planes out of spandex. None of that. No, it seems that a couple of youngsters wearing spandex flying on family passes. Like, Andrea, do you ever date a pilot?
I never dated a pilot.
No. Okay. Well,
I
you know,
have friends who are pilots.
And by the way, neither have I. if you have a family member who flies for United or any of the major airlines, they have these friends and family passes, and the regulations have changed over the years. But those folks have different dress codes than the rest of us who get on planes. And these girls were wearing spandex and were turned away because they were flying with passes and the dress code. That's the full story, as opposed to some of the screaming headlines that says United wants to tell you what you can wear. And finally, this. This is something that Orion brought up years ago. This is something that other people have talked about, but now it's starting to get some news traction. Will Illinois legalize weed for the tax money? Who's in for legalized weed for the tax money?
You know what's weird about this, too? They said that they would regulate it like they would alcohol, which to me is just so bizarre.
Why is it bizarre?
Because you can go, you know, if you're carrying pot, I know it's illegal now, but you can face jail time. If you pull Dave over and he's carrying a bottle of unopened hooch, he's not going to jail.
Yes, if he's driving.
Well, yeah.
Oh, unopened, you said.
Unopened, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I just don't think you can regulate pot like you can alcohol, but who knows? I mean, we do need the money.
Yes, and it could generate somewhere north of
$800 million, yeah.
We need money.
It's a drop in the bucket, but it's a good drop. And even though I am not interested in partaking in the weed, like the rest of you hippies on the show.
No, I've never done weed.
Neither have I. But the tax dollars seem to be right. And study after study compares the dangers of weed to liquor favorably. Okay? So there you go. There's your top six.
Hey,
six.
Steve. Hey, Steve. Yes. This is Sandberg talking.
I know. I can hear you, believe me.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah. I
would have been really bummed if we were working on a show where the host, like, wasn't alive anymore. So
that would have been dreadful. You know, nobody would have felt worse than me.
I just wanted to weigh in on, I think that there should be more rules on airlines on what people should wear and bring on. No, nobody should be allowed to bring on onions. I don't want to see your pillow from home on the airplane. I think you should, like, you know, look presentable, like you're going for a job interview.
What flight were you on where people had onions?
Oh, I'm so with you on that.
Oh, they bring Subway sandwiches?
Oh, people
sandwiches?
Bring food, this really smelly food onto the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I've had that, but not onions. Oh, onions yeah, and liver.
Onions on those Subway sandwiches.
Gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, those aren't good. No, those should be taken away, and there should be a window in the back that you could open and throw them out somewhere over Kansas.
There you go.
But yeah, and people used to dress up for being a poet. Dave,
how
you and I remember
it?
A decade called the 70s. Andrea, you remember a decade
yeah,
called the
sure.
80s.
I do. People would dress up, and now people wear their pajama pants on top.
But here's another that's reason ridiculous. Why. Here's because if you did dress up, like if I was wearing a suit on a plane, which I did if I was going to do a game or something, and you could take the sport coat and you could put it in the overhead bin. But now if you put it in the overhead bin, it's going to be smashed to bits by steamer trunks that are up there.
Yeah. Well, I do think there's something there to that, because once passengers started to be treated like it was a bus station, the quality of everything went down. I'm not knocking buses here. I'm just saying that there's a different standard. And when we started to be treated like we were riding buses, people started to go, well, then I'll just wear my pajama pants.
I think it's terrible. Plus, now they're going to charge you, $10 or $20 to put your coat in the overhead bin. So.
That's right.
Well, it depends on the coat. You know, if it's
you should always wear socks
a mink?
On a plane. Always wear socks.
Wasn't that the Samuel L. Jackson movie, Socks on a Plane?
Socks on a Plane.
Socks on a Plane? I remember that, Socks on a Plane.
It's
wasn't
disgusting
a great movie.
With bare feet, people.
Yeah, people take...
start somebody clipping their toenails.
Oh, so, oh come on.
Come on.
Never seen
people
that.
Haven't
where?
Done that on a
come
plane.
On, I've heard
that's
of it.
Ridiculous.
They clip
oh,
toenails
no.
everywhere.
You can't do that. You can't because I tried to paint my nails years ago, and
oh,
they said, no, you
well,
can't do that.
Just as bad.
Because you can't bring toenail clippers on.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. Dave, remember that flight you and I were on where the guy had the prostate exam up for a couple
yeah.
seats
yeah.
in front of us? I mean, you can't have that.
Got to live
with
that.
Oh, speaking of doctors, Dr. Kevin Most in a moment. First, Mary with the traffic. Dr. Kevin Most joins us a little bit early today because we want to do at least talk about last week's festivities before we get to what's going to happen now to your health care by just going back to Obamacare. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. You doing okay?
Feeling pretty good, actually, yeah. And I want to thank Dr. Ambler. I want to thank Brian. Brian, the transport guy at the hospital, couldn't be a nicer guy. And a bunch of other folks there. I mean, your staff, your nursing staff, everybody at Central DuPage Hospital. Tremendous folks.
Well, thank you. That's, you know, it takes a team effort to take care of patients and to make sure we treat them safely and with courtesy and respect. And you know, I think people think, oh, well, Steve's a celebrity, and that's why he got that treatment. And I can assure you that everybody gets that treatment here.
Yeah, even though I am a huge diva.
You are.
Yeah, and Catching Annie.
For crab legs in the morning is probably, yeah.
Annie, the nurse, could not have been nicer. They're all great. Anyway, yeah. All right, so here's the brief on what happened. I had bronchitis for a second time. And I, you know, was having trouble breathing, and I thought, well, it's the bronchitis. I went in to see the doctor because I had a pulmonary embolism, blood clots in my lungs back in 2005. They said, we got a history here. Let's run a check. The initial check found nothing. 2 days later, the shortness of breath was worse. They did a CT scan and found that I had blood clots in my lungs, or in other words, another pulmonary embolism. Put me in the hospital, got me on blood thinners, and sent me home Saturday. So let's start with the basics here. What is a pulmonary embolism so people understand?
Yeah. So our blood, we need our blood to clot. When we're cut, when we have surgery, we need it to clot. What we don't want it to do is clot when it doesn't need to. Unfortunately, some people will put themselves in situations or have medical conditions where they do clot. And when they have that clot and it loosens up, it flows from the legs often, up into the right side of the heart, and then it's pushed into the lungs. And in the lungs, it's blocking now blood flow to the lungs and can cause, unfortunately, a death in some people. So it's essentially a blood clot that has traveled from your legs into your lungs.
So how is that different than a DVT?
Well, the DVT is the clot. So deep venous thrombosis, that is the clot. And that when that DVT loosens up or frees up or a portion of it comes off, that is what the clot is that's going to the lung. So the DVT is what starts it, and as it moves, that goes into the heart and then into the lungs, and that's where your damage happens.
Okay, so behind my left knee, let me show you this on camera. Behind my left knee, I have a clot now. They think that that was the source and that that's where this was shearing off, for lack of a better word, and creating this breathing problem. And because I had the previous experience, I knew that there may be an issue here. And between Dr. Ambler and my own concern, we got it figured out very quickly. But for people that have never gone through that or don't know what it feels like, what do you say to them?
Well, two things. One, kudos to Dr. Ambler. He's a great guy. He's a great doc. This time of the year, I can't tell you how many people are coming in saying, you know what, I'm coughing and I'm a little short of breath. And to just push that off and say, oh, don't worry about it, you're going to get better, for him to take those additional steps essentially could have been life-saving. Mm-hmm. So what we really need to talk to people about is because they don't know when they have a blood clot in their legs. Some people will. They'll say, why is my right leg bigger than my left? Why is this warm? Why is this red? Sometimes it looks like it may be an infection. The other big thing is where your clot was behind your knee. People that are going to be sitting in a position for a long time, think about blood flow. Anytime there's a kink in the vein, like when you're sitting down right now, the blood slows down to a point where it can clot. So that's why we tell people, don't sit for long periods of time. Don't take long car rides. We're driving all the way to Florida, and we're not going to get out of the car. Bad idea. Airplane rides, anything greater than 2 hours, make sure you get up and move around. Because when your legs are bent like that, the blood slows to a point where clots can form.
I actually have my leg elevated because I'm smarter than I look now.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. I have something called an antithrombin 3 deficiency. It's just one of my many deficiencies, Doc, as you know.
Yes.
And there's a thing called a factor 5 Leiden syndrome. These are various, kind of rare, not terrible. In my case, the AT3 thing I think is pretty rare, but the factor 5 thing, not so much. But these tend to give me or people who deal with that more of a propensity to have blood clots. So you got to be careful with flying and all the other things you just spoke about with sitting still for long.
Correct. Yeah, so when we clot, it's just not a simple, oh, we're not clotting and then we're clotting. There's a cascade event that happens that tells our body and tells our platelets and tells red blood cells to clump and clot. When people have different factors that they're either missing or there's too much of them, then they have a higher propensity to clot, to form clots. If you find that out early in life, it's often life-saving because then we can treat you with medications. The anticoagulation that you're going to be on, that you've been on in the past, stops that from happening. Now, we are going to still tell you, don't sit for long periods of time, get up and exercise, move around, do all the other things. But at least the medication that we're going to give you is going to make it harder for those clots to form.
Well, I feel dramatically better than when I went into the hospital on Thursday, but how do I know, or how does anybody know who's going through this or has gone through this, that they're getting better? Because the weird part is, and this is the tough part to wrap your head around, the medication stems the tide of the clot, and as I understand it, Doc, keeps the clot from being active in getting worse, but the body actually takes care of getting rid of those clots. So it's a little weird thinking you're walking around with blood clots in your lungs or in your legs. So how do I know I'm getting better?
Yeah, exactly. And what you said is very important because people think, oh, I'm taking the blood thinners. They're going to dissolve that clot away and it's going to be gone. When in fact, no, that's not the case. We do have medications that can help dissolve clots, TPA being one of them. And in some cases, if it's bad, we'll go in and surgically remove the clot. But for the most part, what's going to happen is we're going to stop that clot from getting bigger and we're going to stop more clots from forming with the blood thinners. So for you, it's all based on your symptoms. That unexplained shortness of breath, that cough, that rapid breathing, those are the signs that are saying, okay, boy, I don't feel so short of breath anymore. I can walk up that ramp at work and I'm not short of breath. I can go up a flight of stairs. You know, unexplained shortness of breath is probably one of the biggest things there. So really for you, it's going to be watching your symptoms and then also looking for any of those signs of DVTs. Do you have any pain in your legs? Do you have any swelling in your legs? Any redness in your legs? Those are going to be the big ones for you.
And obviously for anybody, it's work out more, lose weight, get more sleep, and just be generally more healthy. It fixes everything.
Yeah, it really is. You know, keeping active and moving is probably the biggest thing. Don't sit on the couch all day. Get up and move around. And if you have to sit, if you're in an airplane and it's turbulence and, you know, 4 hours you have to sit there, stretch out your legs and at least move your ankles and calves so that you're at least moving as much as you can. But try not to get in a position where you're going to stay at one time with those legs bent, because they're slowing down your blood flow at two places, one at your knees, one at your hips. Think about the tubes and where that kink would be, just like if it was a hose. That's where the blood flow slows down and you have a higher chance of a clot forming.
So whether you have a cold or not, shortness of breath that's significant, like in my case, walking 200 yards from the car to the radio station, it felt like I'd run a mile in a sprint. That is a significant sign. Also, if your calf, either calf, is swollen, sensitive to touch, red in color or warm to the touch, yep, those are all warning signs, and don't miss any of them. Get to the doctor.
Absolutely. And you know what? And the doctor, for the most part, tell him you're concerned. Say, hey, you know what? I'm concerned about a pulmonary embolism. Now, he may say, okay, let me tell you why I don't think it is, or let's make sure that we test to make sure that it's not. Because we have a lot of people that have pulmonary embolisms across this country. And a lot of them, even someone like you, where yours was a showered effect, some of them go undiagnosed, that doesn't get any worse. The shower goes away, and now all of a sudden you're starting to feel better, and you're like, wow, I had this terrible cold. You can't believe my bronchitis and shortness of breath that I had.
Man, but it turns out it was much more serious.
Yep.
Dr. Kevin Most on the Obamacare continuing situation and what it means for providers. Thanks for all that, Doc, first, and then we'll come back and do some more in a second. We'll get to the big story before we get to any of that. Next on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Back to Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, making people better by making medicine better. And Doc, welcome back. He'll join us in just a second.
Yep.
There you are. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning.
Thanks for the continued service here. Before we go any further, somebody on the text line asked about compression socks in our previous discussion, you know, pulmonary embolisms, DVTs, blood clots in general.
Yep. So compression socks, they're kind of hit and miss. Some people they work well with, other people they don't. And mainly it is because of the fit. So sometimes they're too tight, sometimes they're too loose, so they really often don't work. So they've kind of, some people have taken them and kind of fallen out of vogue just because of the inability to size them properly and are really pushing exercise more. Although some people still wear them and it works well. So it's really one of those discussions, have with your doctor, make sure you can be fit properly before you say, I'm just going to go into the store and buy some.
And you were talking about a cough before. I had one other question too, and that is, I still have a cough, which I don't. You know, I'm not coughing up blood or anything, but I mean, right. I feel like I've had the cough for most of the year from the bronchitis. So it's another one of those, what's it coming from things?
Yeah. And that's tough. Like this time of the year, like I said, you know, you got all these people with upper respiratory infections. You got trees popping right now. So you got the possibility of allergies causing this and upper respiratory viral infections causing this, bacterial infections causing it. Pulmonary embolism way down on the road there when you're looking at, if you were in Vegas, you'd put a lot more money on X than you would on pulmonary embolism. But still, it should be that sign that, you know, we always tell people coughs are going to last maybe 3 weeks. Anything beyond that, and cough associated with shortness of breath, that's more of a red flag.
Is there much action in the Vegas books on pulmonary embolisms? Is the pulmonary embolism book not a lot of money being made there?
No, not right now.
Okay.
Oh.
So here's what we want to do. We're going to get an update from Mary on the traffic. And then, Doc, when we come back, we'll start by talking about what some of our own insurance issues are. And, Andrea, I don't know if you have any with our insurance, or Dave, or Mary, but or Sandberg, Jake, any of you guys. We'll go with some whiny staff questions about it.
Excellent.
I have one myself.
Excellent.
Because we want to know, now that the Republicans had their massacre Friday and Obamacare stays, what does it mean for the rest of us? And, Andrea, keep an eye on those texts. If we get a good text question in at 312-981-7200, we'll try to pop a couple of those as well. More with Dr. Kevin Most, but first, here's Mary with the cars. All right, we'll get to our whiny staff questions coming up. But first, Doc, let's go over some of the basics on the Republican failure to repeal and replace Obamacare and the fact that Obamacare for the immediate future, and I'm talking about, you know, several months. The earliest they'll take this up again, I would think, would be the fall session. But let's go over some of the basics here. The individual mandate stays in place, right?
Correct. Which is probably one of, at least in my opinion, one of the bigger points. You know how insurance works. If you don't get in a car accident, you say, why am I paying all this money for my insurance? But when you get in an accident, you're certainly happy that you had the insurance. Same in healthcare. You know, we need these individuals who aren't going to use it to make it so that the insurance companies at least can be profitable or close to profitable in caring for those who do need it. It's just the business of insurance, unfortunately.
Right, and the only way for the insurance to work is that everybody pays.
Right, which is exactly what we saw here at the beginning of the Affordable Care Act. The fine for not getting insurance was so low that all of these healthy individuals said, you know what, I'm going to stay out. And you saw a rush for people with chronic illnesses that had been waiting for this opportunity to get insurance go in. So when that happens, the insurance companies got crushed. And so now you're starting to see the premiums go up. The fine has gone up to a point now where almost everybody's in because the fine is about what you would pay for your premium. So you might as well have it instead of pay the fine and not get anything. But it's the actuaries that kind of missed out on this because the math didn't work those first couple years.
And the problem really comes down to, it's not about premiums, because one of the big sales points is always your premiums will stay the same or go down. Well, I think everybody's premiums are fairly manageable, but it's the crazy deductibles.
Absolutely. You know, if you look across this country and you say, gosh, oh, everyone has insurance now. Well, they do, but if they did have something catastrophic happen to them, they may have a $5,000 deductible. These people are living paycheck to paycheck in many cases, and even the premium is making them decrease their standard of living right now. So if we think that they have the money in their accounts to pay for that deductible, that's a very mistaken thought.
As you go forward with this and the impact being felt across the country, we got a lot of insurance companies who are either dropping out or say they're going to drop out. Now, there was a big political point made that Aetna dropped out, and that was another example of the fact that Obamacare was failing. To be politically fair about this, Aetna tried to have a merger that the government turned down, and that's the reason they're backing out. But what do you know from a provider standpoint, is you guys being one of the major hospitals in the country, what does it mean for you guys?
Oh, it's huge for us for a couple of reasons. One, you know, if your marketplace has a lot of plans, then you have to decide which plans you're going to be in. And that's a decision that the hospital needs to make, and then doctors need to make it. And then the patients are saying, well, wait a second, is my doctor in the plan? Is the hospital in the plan? So when you get it down to just a few, you know, okay, so hospitals are going to be in three plans, we'll say, on the marketplace. You're going to hope that the doctors are, because now you have patients that are kind of between a rock and a hard place going, wait a second, I want to go to Dr. Smith, but he's not in this plan. And the only plan I can afford is this one. And now my specialist is downtown, or now my specialist is 20 miles away. And now I have to go to a different hospital. So we have to figure a way that it's affordable and local so that patients in the community can still receive care from the specialist and primary care docs in the community and the hospitals in those communities.
And there's a couple of things that are fairly innovative, but may not be fair in the long run. I don't know, that we'll get to in a second. Andre, what am I missing here? What do you have for me?
I think, you know, the main question that I have, and I always bring this up to you too, Steve, I just want to make sure, you know, now that everything's staying in place, when we go back to what was Obamacare and will continue to be Obamacare, at least for now, will deductibles stay in place? I know a lot of time, kind of midpoint of the year is when we start thinking about next year and renewing and everything like that. Will we see any sort of an increased doc, either in deductibles, premiums, prescription drugs, anything of that sort, as we stand right now?
Yeah, I still think that you're going to see an increase in premiums next year. I don't think that they're going to get it right this year. They look at some of the increases in Illinois. Those premiums have gone up 40-45%. Now, if they shot too far, are they going to drop the premiums? I doubt that's going to happen, because they took such a financial hit in the past 2 years. So premiums, I would expect, are going to still go up a little bit. I don't think you can make the deductibles go up any higher. I mean, I think that that's not going to be a selling point for someone to rush into something that now has a $10,000 or $12,000 deductible, unless the individual mandate pushes them there.
Explain what Advocate Healthcare is doing, and I don't know if this is fair or good, or I can't kind of wrap my head around it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's fair and it's good. I have a lot of friends at Advocate. You know, obviously, if you look at medicine, we all compete against each other. But Advocate is a great health system, and they have some great doctors, and they have some great innovation. And what they did is they went to Blue Cross and said, you know what, we want to partner with you, Blue Cross, to make an Advocate plan. And one of the restrictions are going to be that if you take the Advocate plan, you're going to see an Advocate doctor, and you're going to receive care at an Advocate hospital. But because of the way that they're managed right now, they could offer that at a lower premium than some of the other plans. So you did see patients going, wait a second, Good Samaritan and Downers Grove, that's my hospital. My doctor is an Advocate doctor who goes there. I can have this plan. I know that my doctor's in it, and I know my hospital's in it, and it's less expensive. I'm going to go with it. So Advocate has kind of figured out a way to lower the premium and still deliver the care that they want and attract patients to their hospital.
Kind of genius in some ways, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. It's brilliant. You know, and as long as they've done the math right and their actuaries are right, they may hit a home run here.
Let's go to the whiny staff questions. Andrea, what are your concerns?
I had mine. I know Mary has a concern, too. Not about me, but...
You're covered. Is Andrea covered on Mary's insurance?
Yeah. Which would be fine, Mary.
Pat and I can adopt her.
That'd be great.
Be our child.
All right, Sandberg, what's your question?
I want to know if there's ever any like negotiating with the insurance. I just had my annual exams, and I have the type of insurance where your annual female type appointments are covered 100%. However, apparently, my doctor, who's in network and it's covered 100%, uses a lab that is not covered.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
So I owe money because they used an out-of-network lab. But how would I ever even know that? Can I complain?
You absolutely can complain. You can complain to your doctor. You can also complain to that lab, so that sometimes they'll just take what's normal and customary and won't have you have that additional charge. And what, it's very interesting what you said, because a lot of patients don't realize that even in hospitals, the anesthesiologists, the radiologists, the emergency room doctors, they often don't work for the hospital. Those are independent groups, and you have to hope that they're in the plans as well. Now, at CDH, we say, hey, if you're going to practice here in anesthesia, you need to be in these plans, because we don't want to mislead those patients. But in many cases, that's not true. So the lab one is a big issue, because lab bills can be huge. So if you're going to your doctor and he says, you need to have this lab test done, ask that question. Do they take my insurance? Because if they don't, you can find a lab that does. You can bring in your little slip of paper that says, I need my cholesterol tested, and they will do it on a lab that covers, that is covered by your plan. So it's a great question to ask.
Well done. Mary Vandeville.
Oh, yeah, I was just reading some of these texters' questions, actually. And, you know, there's basic concerns about somebody who brings home $360 a week with other bills they have. How can they afford Obamacare at $300 to $500 a month, depending on coverage? And do they qualify for Medicaid?
Is it going to be, Doc, is it going to be some sort of, because Medicaid and Medicare are going to stay largely the same, though there are some changes with Obamacare as well. Yeah. It's not like the Republican thing. But, Doc, is there going to be some way to help people cover these deductibles? There's got to be a business there.
Well, absolutely. Well, there's a couple of things that are going on there. And to Mary's question, you know, the individual who is bringing home a small amount of money, a lot of these plans are heavily subsidized to a point where they aren't paying the premium at all. So it depends on where you fall in the federal poverty level as far as what your premium is. So when we're talking about premiums of $1,000, you know, for the individual who falls at a certain poverty level, they may not pay anything. It may be covered completely, or they also may, as Steve just pointed out, qualify for Medicaid. So those are the two issues there with that. What was your other question, Steve? Because it was a good one.
Well, I was just bringing up the fact that there seems to be a business that could be developed to help subsidize people who can't afford the deductibles.
Absolutely. So it's interesting. Even out here, we have a thing called Access to Page. And what we did is we looked and we said, wow, these individuals who have the bronze plan can't afford that deductible. But if we moved them to a silver plan, they could. But they can't afford it. But a group of community members here and hospitals and a bunch of individuals put a pile of money together and said, you know what, if you're in the bronze plan and you qualify, we will upgrade you to the silver plan. So it's great for patients in the community. It's also good for the hospitals and good for the others in the community, because now you have people who have affordable health care and they're not afraid of that deductible, and they're going to continue to seek care. It's happened here in DuPage County. It's happened across the country, and it's something that communities should look into, to say that individual who can only afford the bronze plan, you know what, you can all upgrade him to the silver plan. He's going to get much better care.
Dave, we're way late here, but I don't want to leave you out of whiny questions. Do you have anything?
No, I'm good.
Dave's the picture of health. All right, that's good to know.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, please, yeah. You are. You're Kale. Mr. Atlas.
Kale will still be covered in most plans, so don't worry.
Thank God.
Excellent. Thank you, Dave.
Because we know it's deadly. Ryan Nobles from CNN coming up. Doc, great information, and thank you again to everybody at CDH and Northwestern for saving my behind, even though that's not where the problem was. I will talk to you later, bud.
You got it. Take care.
See you later. News next, 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
The people who are to blame are the people who would not vote yes.
This bill didn't pass because it didn't deal with the most fundamental flaw in Obamacare.
I can tell you, no one has been more self-critiquing than me.
And this conversation should be more about the people whose lives are going to be impacted by our decisions on their health care. We did not have enough of a substantive discussion.
Never once have I seen him blame Paul Ryan.
But ultimately, I don't think you can lay the defeat of this bill last week on any single faction in the House of Representatives.
I think there's probably plenty of blame to go around.
This is not the end of the debate. It's like saying that Tom Brady lost at halftime.
Once again, if you are a politician and you feel the urge to be funny, just lie down until it passes. And then you can get up and you'll be good again. Our friend Ryan Nobles joins us after another very busy weekend. Hardest working man in the news business. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you, Steve. How are you feeling?
I am feeling fine. Thank you. Bad genes, G-E-N-E-S. You know, these things happen. But I'll be back in studio tomorrow, haunting all of my friends.
Ooh, we can't wait.
Yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, but sure.
It's great to hear your voice, that's for sure.
Thanks. Thanks, but I watched all weekend, as I always do, and it's another busy week ahead. I guess people think it's funny for me to say this. I don't blame Trump for this healthcare thing because I had no expectations that he understood what he was talking about to begin with. This is a Paul Ryan failure. This is a Republicans can't get along failure because, Ryan, in my view, Democrats fight behind closed doors for the most part. Republicans fight in front of everybody and hurt themselves.
Yeah, I think this was the first reality check for everyone that's part of this new kind of Washington cabal that's been established after the 2016 election. You have a group of Republicans who even Paul Ryan admitted have been an opposition party for 10 years. They've never had to say yes to anything. You have a president that knows nothing about the legislative process, has never held elective office before, has no depth of understanding when it comes to a complex issue like health care. And you have particularly a group of Freedom Caucus members who have really kind of defined themselves as the opposition party, regardless of who the party is in power. And this really sets the stage for what's going to be a very difficult year for Donald Trump, especially if he has any hope of enacting this ambitious agenda. But even before he gets to that agenda, Steve, the story that's going to emerge today in Washington is a looming threat of a government shutdown. We haven't talked about a government shutdown in some time, but we're only about 45 days away from a continuing resolution needing to be passed to continue to fund the government. We kind of push that aside as not being a problem because Republicans can control every faction of government. But after what we saw with this healthcare debacle, it doesn't matter because their factions are so split. Why would the Freedom Caucus, who has consistently opposed raises to the debt ceiling in order to fund government, why would they do it now just because Donald Trump is president when they had no interest in going along with him on this health care plan? That's going to be a big battle coming up here in the next couple weeks.
And I think most folks remember how tough it was for Obama to explain why the debt ceiling was not, you're spending more money here. It was authorizing money to pay for what we had already spent. So that takes it to another level of argument, which is, well, you're idiots. You're spending money in the wrong ways. And I would even make the argument that with all the factions that have now been exposed on the Republican side, maybe the Democrats are still in control.
Certainly the Democrats just sat back and watched the whole situation, I'll use one of the president's favorite terms, implode. They didn't even have to really get involved in the debate. They basically just danced on the grave of this legislation after it all went down. And, you know, what I thought was interesting over the weekend on the Sunday morning talk shows is you saw all of the Trump talking heads, like Reince Priebus, for instance, talk about reaching out to moderate Democrats. And there is some sense in the White House right now that they're ready to abandon these Freedom Caucus members because essentially Trump laid everything on the line for him and said, I'll give you everything you want. And they still said no. So he's like, well, forget it. I'm not going to play with them anymore. Let me see if I can go play with these moderate Democrats. But why on earth, if you were a Democrat, would you in any way, shape or form even consider dealing with this president when he's been nothing but adversarial and acting as if he had all the control? It seems like a fantasy to me to think that all of a sudden now he's going to be able to gather some sort of broad coalition of people of different ideologies to push through his agenda, when at this point he has not at any point attempted to reach out to that group of people.
Yeah, and on Friday when he said, we're just going to let it explode and it's going to explode and look out, it'll explode. Everyone duck, it's going to explode. If he said explode one more time, I would have thought I was watching Bugs Bunny. it has to understand, and apparently somebody got to him this weekend, that his words matter in regards to this as well. And the idea that people could just go ahead and suffer because he lost politically is just another moment of Trump being Trump, and we're all tired of it. We're only 67 days in. Andrea, jump in here.
Sorry, Brian, I want to ask you about Jared Kushner and this new Office of American Innovation, I think it's going to be called. But first of all, something you said before really just popped at me, looming government shutdown. Does that mean, because I saw the Reuters story over the weekend about economists are saying that the economy is not going to grow as, while we're doing well now, it's not going to grow as fast as Trump had promised. Does that mean things like the infrastructure bill, all of those that are really kind of designed to stimulate and move the economy forward, does that mean all of those will be on hold now, or is that going to be the next big hurdle?
Well, I think what was exposed this weekend, Andrea, with this battle over health care, is that Donald Trump does not have the sway with congressional Republicans that we thought he had. So, you know, for there were many Democrats that were scared to death that he was just going to come in and systematically dismantle the Obama legacy because he had all the votes. But what we're finding, and what this government shutdown will be a good indication of, is that, and there was even, we have some reporting that there were, members of Congress, particularly in this Freedom Caucus, that, you know, looked Donald Trump right in the face and basically told him that they weren't scared of him, that they didn't believe that he was more popular than they were in their own district. So, yes, the answer to your question is he can't even begin to think about a broad infrastructure plan or tax reform, which everybody's saying, well, they'll just go do tax reform now because there's broad Republican support there. He can't do any of that if they have to first get through some sort of a continuing resolution on a government spending, because the entire government will be hobbled as a result of it. But I think what we are seeing here is that, you know, Washington is a difficult place, and Donald Trump thought he was going to come here and drain the swamp, as he said. Mick Mulvaney, his budget director, said on Meet the Press this week that, well, we're finding out that that's a little bit more difficult than we thought it was going to be. And so his idea was, well, I'm just going to come in and make deals, and this is going to be work out perfectly for me. And he's finding out it's not that simple. So, you know, healthcare was tough. That's one-fifth of the American economy, but it had broad Republican support to get rid of Obamacare. He couldn't do that. Tax reform sounds good, but there are a million different examples of reforming the American tax code, which has been built up over decades and decades and decades. Infrastructure reform is not something that conservative Republicans are all that interested in, so you have to have Democrats for that. So I guess it's along with me saying, Andrea, do the math. You know, this isn't an easy job, and how is he going to pull all of this off in short order like he promised?
And does this have anything to do with the Office of American Innovation now? I mean, all of a sudden, boom, we have this new office. Jared Kushner is going to be in charge of it.
Well, I think what's different about this is, and, you know, the Sean Spicer in particular, White House officials have bragged that Donald Trump has done more in his first 60 days in office than any other president. But put that into context. He's not done one thing legislatively. He has not one legislative accomplishment at this point in his presidency. And if you look back at other presidencies, the bulk of what presidents accomplish happens in the first 200 days of office, which is a little scary to think about broadly. So the idea that he's not passed one piece of legislation yet is a little bit scary. But when step back in this, again, what they're going to sign another executive order today on this American Innovation Office. And essentially what it is he's going to have Jared Kushner go in and review all the ways these different agencies operate in terms of contracting, in terms of the different ways that they fund different programs across the country. He may suggest that they privatize some of these entities. He may suggest that they streamline, reduce the federal workforce. These are all things that Trump can do broadly administratively and doesn't necessarily need legislative help to do. So, yeah, maybe he'll be able to pull this off. It could mean that some of these government agencies become more privatized, but does it really represent another accomplishment? And I'll also remind you that during the campaign, he hammered Barack Obama for what he called legislating by fiat, right, as opposed to when Obama put all these executive orders in. And at this point in his presidency, that is literally all he's been able to do.
Just the signing of the paper that could be reversed by the next president whenever he comes in, whether it's June or July.
Exactly.
Ryan, all the best. Tell people where they can follow you on social media.
Ryan Nobles with one N on all the different forms of social media. Always great to be on with you guys.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate
it. Ryan.
Let's get traffic from Mary and then more to come, including after 7:30, a talk about how we can get kids in Chicago public schools fed better so they do better and they can put us all in a home. Only got about a minute here, but I wanted to play this for you. Sean Hannity sold his soul to Donald Trump a while ago. Not that he was doing journalism any more than I am. But the fact of the matter is Sean Hannity has been a blowhard for Trump and not a pleasant individual, and he has a huge following of people who believe every word he says, and that's problematic in a lot of ways. Ted Koppel went to see him for a CBS Sunday Morning to do a profile piece, and something pretty extraordinary happened. Here's the clip.
We have to give some credit to the American people that they're somewhat intelligent and that they know the difference between an opinion show and a news show.
You're
cynical. Look at that.
I am cynical because,
You think we're bad for America? You think I'm bad for America?
Yeah.
You do?
In the long haul, I think you and all these opinion
That's
shows.
That's sad, Ted.
No, you know why?
That's sad.
Because you're very good at what you do and because you have attracted a significantly more influential.
You are selling the American people short.
Let me finish the sentence before you do that.
With all due respect.
You have attracted people who are determined that ideology is more important than facts.
So think about this now. Who in your world would it hurt your feelings most to have them look in your face and go, yeah, you're bad for America.
Right, no kidding.
Yeah, you're a bad person. Yeah, you're bad.
It'd be like a Diane Sawyer or somebody saying that to me. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
It might be you, Steve. If you said that to me, I would feel bad.
Dave, I could never feel that way. You know that?
At least out loud.
No, getting emotional. It's probably the medicine. Stand by. A discussion on CPS schools. It matters to everybody, no matter how well-fed your kid is before they go and after they come home. But before we get to that, quick break, and we're back, and we'll get to the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Back live from my house. Well, it's just me. You guys are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'll be back there tomorrow. So let's make this the Allstate Showcase Steve's office.
I love it.
And thank you for that. Joining us now in studio, Leslie Fowler, CPS Executive Director of Nutrition Sports Services and board member of the Urban School Food Alliance. How are you, Leslie?
Good morning. I'm wonderful. I'm glad to hear you're feeling better.
Feeling better, and sorry I'm not there with you. You got a big summit coming up, and look, we've heard all the way back. Dave, you remember the 60s when you and I were little kids?
Well, I remember the 50s when I was a little kid, but sure, Steve.
Okay, I was a little kid in the 60s, and then in the 70s, and you know, we always were told, eat a good breakfast, eat a good lunch.
Most important, you know, meal of the day.
The school's going to try to feed you to the best of their ability, and then you go home and you have, like, not every kid has food in the morning that they can start the day with, or food at the end of the day, and we need to make sure that the schools are properly funded and taken care of so they can nourish to flourish. Explain what you're trying to do with the program.
Absolutely. So if you think about it like this, there are 15 million children around the country that live in households with food insecurity. And what the National School Breakfast, Lunch, After School, all of those programs do is ensure that kids have access to quality food. What the Nourish to Flourish Summit with the Urban School Food Alliance and the National Dairy Council coming up, what we're trying to do is look at innovative ways to continue to improve the program. We want to continue to drive quality with the meals that we serve, whether it's what's on the plate, marketing, or nutrition education. And even giving an opportunity for the students to interact with their food, whether it's with farmers, whether it's in the classroom, or whether it's after school, they deserve the best that we have to offer. And what we're going to do is, like minds are going to come together from across the country. There are seven of us in the Urban School Food Alliance. We've invited other school districts, manufacturers, people from the USDA, folks from alliances across the country to come together and start talking about how we move the program forward and how we continuously improve.
Is there somebody that's doing it really well right now that we ought to be doing more of what they're doing that maybe you're going to hear from this week?
Absolutely. You're going to hear from, we're going to hear from quite a few people. You're going to get a chance to talk to folks like me here in Chicago. New York City school districts are going to be on point. You're going to have an opportunity. We're going to hear from our Secretary Vilsack, who's going to talk about what we've accomplished in the last 48 years and what he thinks the program should do next.
Yeah, I think
Andrea, jump in here.
Yeah, no, Steve, I think we were talking just before Leslie went on the air about the community gardens. I think Chicago's really doing it right. We were at one of the community gardens in Rogers Park over the weekend, and then there's one in South Loop, too, and I know they're really kind of branching out. Talk about the success of the community gardens and how that really brings students into agriculture and preparing their food and learning about nutrition.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Chicago Public Schools has over 400 of those gardens. My peers in New York and L.A. and Miami, we all believe in community gardens. It's the best of the learning experience. So kids don't get to go out to the farms anymore. We used to take those field trips you talk about back in the day. We used to take field trips out to the farm. We experienced what a cow was and where our milk came from and all that good stuff. Well, our kids don't have those experiences anymore. And so we have to try to find a way to bring those experiences into the classroom. And so kids get to garden, they get to harvest, and they get to eat. And they have a firsthand experience with where their food comes from.
The summit itself starts tomorrow, right?
Absolutely. So we're here for the next 3 days. It'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We're looking for about 400 individuals from across the country to come and engage in a open process of just dialogue. What are we doing and what could we be doing better?
As far as the Chicago Public Schools, too, what do they get right now? I mean, they get a lunch. Is there a breakfast? And I know some of the schools now have an after-school type snack. And is that all provided for them?
Mm-hmm. We also have after-school suppers. We have Saturday meals. We have spring break and holiday meals. We serve meals during the summer. We serve meals on street corners. We serve meals near libraries and parks. We recognize in Chicago that 90% of our students find that they need the program in some way. And so we do everything in our power to ensure that the meals are where the students need them. And in this case, we take it to them.
Well, what do we know scientifically about a kid that eats right during the day and how much more they're going to get out of school?
Oh, wow. The learning process is much better for a child who's healthy and nourished and not thinking about where their next meal is coming from. When a kid is hungry, they can't learn. They can't concentrate. They've got headaches and stomach aches, and they are not quality material for the classroom. They're not in a mindset to be educated.
Yeah, hunger is an awful distraction. Andrea, what was your favorite cafeteria meal in the 80s?
You know what it was? The pizza. I like the rectangular slice of pizza, and then we'd get a pear and a cookie. You know, like a piece of sliced pear. But we would always look forward to that, our meals, like the snickerdoodle cookies.
Are you from Chicago?
I'm from Southside, yeah.
Butter cookie.
Oh, yeah, the butter cookies
the Chicago
were awesome.
Butter cookie.
Yeah.
Yeah, those don't exist anymore.
Oh, no.
Hey, Dave, back in our day when we were growing up, we usually had to wait for the cafeteria lady to kill it live and then skin the pelt, right?
I remember going out to the playground to start the fire so we could cook it.
Yes. I totally remember that as well.
You're scaring Leslie.
Definitely.
This is a step forward, Leslie, but we don't want to take any steps back. So in the middle of this childish nonsense that continues to go on with the state budget, and certainly the school funding is always a question, is there a concern about nutrition being properly funded in Chicago public schools?
No, we've been very blessed. We've had great opportunities to grow participation. This is a USDA funded program, so it's funded from the federal level. It's well funded in terms of structure, and so we don't have any concerns at this time.
Well, that's great. And tell us what we ought to be eating today.
You should have some great salad, some antibiotic-free chicken.
Antibiotic-free chicken.
You should have all the fruits and vegetables you could possibly eat.
Mm-hmm. Love fruit, yeah.
And you should get better.
Okay, fruits and vegetables, good. Notice you didn't say a giant steak there.
A giant steak is great on occasion, but we really want to make sure that you just eat healthy and make good choices.
Yeah, because you want to make sure I get my homework done. I get it. I totally get it. How could people help?
Well, people can definitely ensure that when their kids go to school, they know what's on the menu. They take a look. Get engaged in your school district's parent advisory group or community advisory group. Make sure that you know what's going on and how to make an effort to tell us what you want as parents and students. We don't know. I can tell you what I'd like to eat, but we definitely want to hear more from our students in terms of what they would like. And some of the students will be with us during the conference as well, because the program is for them. And so I could make it very healthy. I could make it, you know, we could eat quinoa and spinach and kale every day, but I'd have healthy trash cans.
It's like dirty talk for Dave.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea.
His eyes perked up at quinoa.
Right. I could have healthy trash cans, but the real deal is it has to be a balance. We have to make sure that we understand what kids want and make it appealing for them as well.
She had him at quinoa, Steve, and sun-dried tomatoes.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Leslie Fowler, CPS Executive Director of Nutrition Sports Services, board member of the Urban School Food Alliance, and the Nourish to Flourish Food Summit is on. You know, these people are coming in from out of town. They're not going to be pelting tourists with tater tots from their hotel windows, are they? You know, people behave when they come in for conventions.
No, we like tater tots, so we'd be keeping them for ourselves.
Got it. Thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a break for traffic. We'll come back and continue. Dean, after 8 Eddie Olczyk, finally on the program after we asked 1,000 times. Oh, Eddie's busy. Eddie's busy.
Oh, Edzo's coming on?
Eddie's not there, but yeah, like you didn't see him this morning. Eddie will be on, and you guys are going to take over at 9 o'clock, but I will be back for the full show tomorrow as we continue. Don't forget CLTV joins us at 9 as well on 720 WGN. 7:55, only got a couple of minutes here. I just want to say thanks again to everybody who has reached out with concern. I am fine. I certainly would have preferred not to have a second pulmonary embolism in 12 years, but it happens, and it did happen. Again, I have something called a AT3 deficiency. It's a fairly rare blood condition that means that I have a propensity to have blood clots where others might not. But the important message for you is that don't ignore the symptoms. And since I knew what the symptoms were, I was able to get to the hospital. And Dr. Most, Dr. Ambler, and the CDH Northwestern people took really good care of me, even though I think Nurse Annie got tired of me.
never. Steve, you were last week when you had the bronchitis and it took you a while to get over the cold as well. You were complaining a little bit last week of shortness of breath. Is that kind of when you knew this must be something a little bit more?
That's when I went in for the follow-up and got a CT scan and all of that and found a bunch of blood clots in my lungs. Now, the problem with blood clots in your lungs are they have to go through your heart to get there. And once they're there, they can go back to your heart or to your brain and cause a stroke or a heart attack, and that could be it. So I'm very lucky. I've survived two of these now. It doesn't mean I won't get another one, but as long as I follow the doctor's orders, I should be fine. And take a little better care of my health in general as well wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, follow the doctor's orders because we miss you.
Well, thank you.
We want you back here.
I'm just pausing for Dave to chime in.
We want you back here, Steve, very much. I hit the wrong button there.
You almost pulled a muscle trying to find the mic.
Aww, I'll chime in. We miss you, Steve.
No, of course we miss you.
By the way,
I texted you last night.
By the way, Steve, this will warm your heart. Dave basically chased Leslie Fowler, who did a great job, our nutritionist who was just in here, chased her down the hallway, and I think she kind of ran from you at one point, but to show her a picture of a kale garden that he took over the weekend at the Flower and Garden Show.
At the Flower and Garden Show, they had dinosaur kale. You would love it.
That's tremendous. That's really good news. Fortunately, in my condition, too much vitamin K from greenery is a bad idea. I'll be back tomorrow for the full show. We'll continue with this show and the news coming up next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Live to Channel 9 and my friend Dean Richards.
My
friend. Hope you had a delightful weekend.
Well, it was okay.
Are you sick?
I did get sick again, yes.
You know,
I don't think I'm as sick as you are.
Actually, you sound sicker. I had the bronchitis, you know, not any bronchitis. I had the bronchitis.
Right. Right.
And then the bronchitis came back in March.
Show
and
off.
And then I decided to top it off with a little blood clot issue.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I read about that. I was shocked because I was out of town most of last week. Then when I got back, I got the flu again. I got the whole ball of wax again.
Did you get the flu shot this year?
I did not.
What are you thinking, man? What are you doing?
I don't know. I just forgot.
I know people.
I just forgot. You know, it's so hard to get one now. It's not like you can just go to a Walgreens or any pharmacy or any place and get a flu shot in like 5 minutes.
I got a guy named Louie. He'll do it out of the back of his Kia.
I'm getting, just to make up. I'm going to get a flu shot every single day for the rest of this year.
Seems right. Doesn't actually seem right.
I'm being inoculated for everything. Rabies. Everything. I'm getting.
Is the rabies problem bigger than I thought it was?
I am wearing a flea and tick collar right now.
Answer my question. Is the rabies thing bigger than it used to be?
Yes. I'll say yes. I have no idea if that's true.
Bubonic plague sure is.
I'll take a vaccine for that, too.
Hey, speaking of that, Steve Dale's coming in at 9. And,
speaking of the plague.
Steve Dale's bringing in a dog, and that dog is allegedly cuter than ever. And does not have bubonic plague. So I just want to make sure everybody knew that. That's the kind of It's the meds talking, Dean. What do you want from me?
Hey, talk to me. I've been on NyQuil for the last 3 or 4 days.
So, all right. So where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin with a story that is just coming out this morning, actually reported by Cranes, who is reporting that we're going to have a blues museum in Chicago. It's about time.
Amen to that.
After Chicago's long history with the blues, the tradition of the blues, featuring the blues, it's about time that we show this off, you know, for tourists and natives alike. It's going to be called, according to Cranes, the Chicago Blues Experience. It'll be a privately run 50,000 square foot facility that will be right near Millennium Park, actually not far from our own studios at 25 East Washington, so just a couple of blocks away from Tribune Tower. It's set to open in the spring of 2019. And we'll feature the city's history of the blues. We'll feature performances. It'll be multimedia. They say the city's Department of Cultural Affairs is saying that this is going to be an unfulfilled cultural promise for Chicago. So many people come to Chicago thinking of the blues. Now there will be some place for them to visit and learn about it.
Well, there's a lot of places you can go in town and be sad. This will actually give you a chance to be sad and feel good about it.
Right. Yeah, a lot of play. If you want to get sick, come to Tribune Tower, because that's what we seem to be specializing in
right.
Lately. But if you want to be, you know, just get the blues, you can pretty much go anywhere. If you want to learn about the blues, you know, that's what this is about. So,
Is there any chance that they'll feature my hit? I thought I had bronchitis, and it turned out to be a blood clot.
Dun, 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 dun.
Thought I had bronchitis. I was short of breath. You remember that song?
Don't push yourself.
Yeah, probably shouldn't. All right, now, I don't ask for much. You know, I'm not trying to hurt anybody.
Never.
I'm just minding my own business.
Never. Always kind.
I want to meet Mel Brooks when he comes to town. I have never met him in person. I've talked to him a million times. He's one of my idols. I want to meet Mel Brooks.
I have zero control of this, but I will see if I can get the ball rolling on making that happen.
Okay.
Because I've interviewed him several times. I had the pleasure when the producers opened here in Chicago before it went to Broadway and broke every Broadway record that there was. He was in town quite a bit, and I got to talk to him quite a bit then. He was in town recently at the Chicago Theater hosting a screening of Blazing Saddles. They showed the movie.
Right.
And then he came out and did this long Q&A for somebody who, I don't know if he's officially turned 90 years old, but he's pretty close to it. He's on stage, hilarious as ever.
Right.
After the Blazing Saddles screening. So now he's going to do it again. They're going to show Young Frankenstein on a big screen at the Chicago Theater Saturday, May 27th. Just to see it on big screen is super cool. But right after that, Mel Brooks is going to come out. He's going to do a Q&A. He's got a little presentation, but he takes questions from the audience. It's completely freewheeling, and these appearances are hilarious. Tickets aren't going to go on sale until Friday, March 31st. So if you want to get tickets, that's when it's going to go on sale, unless you're Steve.
Right.
And then we'll you know, see if we can somehow make something happen. If you promise not to get him sick.
Sandberg, grab a microphone here, because Dean is nearly dead, and obviously I could go at any time. So Sandberg, here's all you have to do. Sandberg, when was the last time I asked you for something? I don't ask for things, do I?
An hour ago.
But I don't ask
that long.
Am I difficult to work for? That's my question.
Difficult to work for?
Yeah.
No, you mean like the only thing you ever ask is for a bottle of water. If
right.
you mean by that
right.
type of thing,
right.
yes.
And think about what you had to do for Steve Dahl. Think about the times you had to testify on his behalf. Think about all the depositions. Uh-huh. Think about everything you had to go through when you were working for Dahl. I don't have any, you know, I don't cause you any grief.
Well, I'm not sure that you don't cause me grief.
I don't cause you anything close to the grief you had when you worked for Dahl.
No, you're learning.
I'm a picnic in the park.
I don't think you thought that.
Sometimes Steve thinks he's the producer. So sometimes that's. Oh,
aren't there the. No,
and then he does things like almost, you know, going to the hospital. Yeah, that's stressful.
There's different levels of grief, too. I think we'd all agree.
Nah, you don't know Dahl.
I don't think this is the answer that Steve was looking for when he said, am I difficult to work for?
So here's the point. The point is, I have a request. I would like you to work out some way for me to get together with Mel Brooks. And by the way, I will go to wherever Mel Brooks is. And as you know, I don't do that.
Okay. I will work on that.
That's it. That's all I need.
When he was here for the...
Thank you.
When he was here for the...
You're welcome, Steve.
...producers... I was complimenting him. This was they had the opening night and then like a cast party at McCormick and Schmick on like by Rush Street area.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm complimenting him, telling him how great it was. I'm laughing. He goes, "Oh, you liked it." And he takes my cheeks, both of my cheeks with like his hands. He goes, "Oh, I'm glad you like it." And he's kind of like slowly like kind of patting my cheeks. Oh, I'm so glad you liked. And as he's talking, he's hitting me harder and harder and harder and harder. I'm laughing hysterically because he's slapping the crap out of me.
He is assaulting you.
He's completely slapping the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I didn't want him to stop.
You know, he pantsed President Obama, or he appeared that he would. He got some award, Medal of Honor, Medal of Goofiness. I don't know what it was. But he walked up to President Obama, this is last year now, and pretended he was going to pants him. And if you see the wide shot, Secret Service starts to move in. What kind of an incident would you have had if Secret Service threw themselves on Mel Brooks?
Mel Brooks trying to undo the buckle of the President of the United States. That's the greatest.
Now that's funny.
That's the greatest. Wasn't he on Conan? Was it last year something he goes on? Of course, he finds a way to, get the comb out of his back pocket and to
pretend he's Hitler.
Hitler, which is still hilarious.
Right.
It's still crazy. But before he came out, he had attached a rubber finger to his hand. So when he put his hand up to do the Hitler salute, he had like 7 fingers on one hand. It was the silliest sight gag of all time.
Oh, you talk to guys like Martin Short, and anybody that gets laughs from being goofy and show busy, it all comes from Mel Brooks.
All Mel Brooks.
Debbie Reynolds, Carrie Fisher, Snoop Dogg, and Elton John. What do they have in common? They're all part of the rest of Dean's show business news when we come back. First, here's Mary with the traffic.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972. Oh.
Back to Channel 9 and Dean. All right, Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher both passed within, a week of each other last year. What's the latest trivia?
Within a day of each other.
Oh, it was a day, that's right.
Yeah, right around Christmas time. They had a private memorial shortly after their deaths, but over this past weekend, they did an open public memorial at the Forest Lawn Cemetery in the Los Angeles area. Thousands of people showed up for this. It also was streaming live over the web. I was watching it at home. It was just like a delightful Hollywood party. It was sad, of course, because we know that they both passed away. But Todd Fisher, the son of Debbie Reynolds, brother of Carrie Fisher, said that he didn't want this to be like a memorial. He wanted it to be like a party, as if you were at their house. And they showed clips of films that no one had ever seen before. They had performances celebrating the careers of these two very celebrated actresses. R2-D2 made an appearance. Steve coughed right in the middle of the whole thing. Are you okay?
Yeah, I apologize. That came
R2-D2 out of nowhere. Does that to him, though.
I just want to... Yeah. I know you're very emotional about your robots.
I am. Especially, bots, we call them. Bots in the business.
Especially lately with all the technology that's been applied to you over the past couple of days.
I'd like to thank Nurse Annie.
Okay.
Hello.
That sounds wrong for some reason.
Steve, I don't go by that all the time, and I thought that was a little secret.
Listen, don't wear the nurse's suit. I change the names a lot.
You know, when I brought you the soup, hello.
Yeah, don't wear the Florence Nightingale outfit if you don't want them to call him.
Not to worry.
Hey, by the way, this is important. A bulletin, breaking news, really actual breaking news. You know, I was in the hospital for a day and a half. I never had to wear the gown.
Really?
No.
Yeah, they let me wear my own stuff.
How'd you get away with
shorts,
that?
You know, didn't have to wear the gown the entire time. And there were a couple times where I had to expose certain things, and they just let me drop the laundry, as we say.
Boxers or briefs?
Well, in that case, it would have been boxer briefs, actually.
Oh.
Kind of a,
combo platter. Yeah.
Dean, didn't you have somebody recognize you one time when you were in a hospital gown?
I was having a, I was in a hospital gown, but it was during the colonoscopy.
Right, no, I didn't mean it was on the street, like
procedure.
During a junket.
It was pre...
When the colonoscopy cart came by.
It was... No, I'm laying on the table getting ready to be phased under.
Be viewed.
And somebody came over, and I thought they were going to do, like, their professional prepping job or, you know, whatever. And they go, "So you're Dean Richards."
That's fantastic.
It's like, and I'm... The part of me that was facing her was not my front, so...
Well, this is, we're not on the air.
I love
right
that
now,
Andrea
right?
knows that story.
Oh, it makes me laugh.
I love Andrea knows all my derriere stories.
Well, we're not on the air right now, are we?
No, not at all.
Previous procedure, I had to have a certain sensitive area shaved, and the nurse thought it would be funny. I'm not making this up to sing Getting to Know You.
Oh.
Getting to Know You.
I think we should all tell our fun hospital stories.
True story. And you think you want to be a mid-level celebrity. I say no.
Mm-mm. No, it can be embarrassing from time to time. Anywho, so they had this huge memorial at Forest Lawn. It was really fun. Dan Aykroyd spoke. He was engaged to Carrie Fisher. While they were making the Blues Brothers here in Chicago, they fell in love on that set. Didn't last very long, but... He talked about his love for Carrie Fisher, his lifelong love for Carrie Fisher, and some old-time Hollywood actresses and actors got up and spoke and sang, and it was like old-school Hollywood. It was really kind of cool.
Snoop Dogg's in the news?
Snoop Dogg is going to be inducting his late friend Tupac Shakur into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Next month in April, he's going to do the formal induction, and they are saying that they're going to be.
don't make yourself cough.
West Side.
Steve. This really just sounds like a hospital show today. This
really does.
This sounds like this could be
kind of pathetic.
Grey's Anatomy here today. There could be an all-star hip-hop reunion with Snoop, with Dr. Dre, and several other huge names in hip-hop all getting together for the performance to induct Tupac Shakur when that happens during the induction next month in Brooklyn.
Hey, what's Snoop's favorite childhood song?
I do not know that.
Puff the Magic Dragon?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because he likes the marijuana.
Why can Snoop never hold on to a hot pocket?
I don't know.
Because he likes to drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot.
Now the rest of us are getting a little, queasy.
Let's see what else I have here. This is a page of Snoop jokes that were sent to me about 10 minutes ago. What would Snoop Dogg's name be if he married Winnie the Pooh?
Snoopy Pooh?
Snoop Dogg Pooh.
Snoop Doggy Dog Poo.
Yeah.
Oh.
God, they're just getting better.
Are you reading highlights for children?
I don't know where these came from, but I'd like to thank the listener that sent them to me.
I stole it from the doctor's office.
Why? This is perfect for today. Why does Snoop Dogg carry an umbrella? The drizzle, my snizzle. You're listening to white people do Snoop Dogg jokes.
Is it time for your medication?
Yeah,
is that what's going on?
I think it's getting closer. Apparently it is. Elton John's birthday?
Elton John turned 70 to 70 degrees.
How
70
old?
Years 70 years old.
Celsius or Fahrenheit?
He's he's been a little Celsius and Fahrenheit through the years.
Yeah, you never knew.
Partly cloudy or sunny.
Appearing at his birthday party and performing Stevie Wonder, Lady Gaga. Who else was there? Katy Perry.
Wow.
Huge long list of superstars, all the same people that came to your birthday party last week.
They performed at my bedside while I was in the hospital, and then I realized I was just hallucinating.
Well, that's maybe what happened with Elton John also, but that has been what is reported.
All right, buddy.
Does that even make sense? That sentence did not make sense.
That's close enough.
For this segment, it's good enough today.
Lay down, put something cold on your head.
I am already.
And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Feel better.
You too there, Sicky. Back with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Olchek got to it. Olchek busting at center ice. Comes over the line. Shooting. He scores! Olchek! A shorthanded goal! He just blew right through the defense at center. Coffey couldn't even catch him. Flared it by Fuhr on the sixth side.
America's heartthrob. Eddie, how do you like my hair, Olchek? Welcome back to the program, buddy.
Everybody's doing well, and this is a first. Two times in one regular season calendar year. I'm honored. I'd like to know who canceled on you today, but I'm happy to be coming from the bullpen.
Eddie, because we know
the bullpen is very important. AD.
It's our honor. Hi, buddy. How are you?
How you doing?
Good.
I'm doing very well. I'm trying to I need some sunglasses here down in Tampa. It's like 84 or 85 degrees already, so I'm trying to just, you know, be prepared for the game tonight.
I'll bring you some. Whatever you need.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Eddie, don't even start with me on this. You haven't been invited on the show. You know how many times we've invited you on the show? Oh, Eddie's busy. I'd have to ask great Mike Emmerich. Does Eddie ever ask about me? No, not really. Eddie's busy. This is literally, we've asked for 3 months, and we finally got you back on.
Yeah, somehow... I think your nose is growing there, Mr. Patrick.
That's not even remotely true. Anyway, I'm glad to have you back. And what the hell happened Saturday night?
Maybe it was on the docket. You know, I mean, you look at the way that the Hawks had played the prior couple of games, and yeah, they found ways to win games and get points and play from behind and maybe not play as well. And I think when you dissect Coach Q speak, I think you could see is that, look, you know, they need to be better. And it kind of came to a head the other night, over in Sunrise there against the Panthers, where just watching a game on television, it was just, they took some penalties. Puck ended up in the back of the net. And, when you're not playing well and you play a team that is desperate and still thinks they have a chance in the playoffs, those are the type of games that can happen. So, look, it's better now than in 2 weeks, but
right.
to say that I'm surprised that, you know, that they lost in Florida, no, how badly they did. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you ever think that this team is going to give up seven goals and not get any, but it, you know, it's just right now they're going through a tough time and they're going to play another desperate team tonight here in Tampa.
You played on a lot of great teams. Did you ever have one of those that came out of nowhere where, you know, you're a great team and all of a sudden somebody that's not making the playoffs puts up seven on you?
Well, I don't know about seven, but I mean, you're going to have those type of games. And, in the sports world, I mean, when you play a season and you go 82 games in a National Hockey League regular season, you're going to have games where you're going to have 20 games where you're going to be lights out, Steve. There's going to be 20 games where you don't have it, and there's going to be those other 40 games that separate everybody else in a National Hockey League.
Well, that's a great analogy.
That's what separates the teams that win, like the Blackhawks have the last 6 or 7 years, and everybody else. You're going to have games where, you know, other teams in the league have good players too, right? Like, it's just not, where you have 6 or 7 teams that have really good players. Everybody's got good players. It's just a matter of, you know, if you're able to put it together for 82 games. So I think the Blackhawks have proven that, you know, those 40 games that are up in the air for every team in the league as they find a way to win, you know, 65 or 70% of those games because they have difference makers. They got guys in goal that have been incredible. They got the back end guys led by Duncan Keith, and then you got the big two up front. And, you know, let's not forget about the bread man. So when you talk about Kane, Taves, and Panarin, and then any given night, those guys can win you a game when you don't play that well. So, yeah, you had plenty of those games where you're going well, and all of a sudden you just throw in a clunker. I mean, it's going to happen. It's just over the course of time, the numbers are going to catch up with you. And a lot of averages say that you're going to have some games that you're not very good, and another team's going to, you know, it's going to feed you your lunch.
I want to ask Dave to get in here and also talk about Tampa Bay tonight and the Frozen Four. We're talking about the Final Four in hoops. Chicago hosted the best in hockey coming up in a couple of weeks. Hey, listen up now, because the great Eddie Olczyk is here and Dave Ennett is here. And Andre, you're going to get the last question before we're done, but we got a couple of things to cover first. Dave, say hi to Eddie.
Eddie, good morning.
Hey, David, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Good to talk to you. You got some young guys who have played some very important minutes, spent a lot of time on the ice with this team over the course of the season. Now you're coming up to the playoffs for guys like Ryan Hartman and Nick Schmaltz. This is going to be their first taste of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Any concerns there, or is it just it's all part of the process for these guys, and knowing how well they've played, it shouldn't be that much of a step up for them?
Yeah, it is a concern, David, because you know when it comes playoff time, the rink gets a little smaller, right? I mean, the rink shrinks, and the intensity goes way up. And for these guys, thinking they know what it's like until they actually get a real strong taste of it. Look, and you put Tanner Kerrow in that spot, and you got Rasmussen too. So, I mean, there are a lot of guys that are going to be asked to play a lot of important minutes. And you know, a lot of it'll be on adrenaline too, right? I mean, especially for a Chicago guy like Ryan Hartman, and to get an opportunity to really be an integral part of this team. He's had a terrific season, but it is a way different animal once you get to that first game of the playoffs. So you can tell the guys, you can show them, but until they actually live it, then all of a sudden they're going to realize and go, "Oh man, this is like okay." This is for keeps, and this is a way different level than the regular season.
Tampa Bay tonight, nothing to lose. They're going to be hard to beat. Who are we watching on that side?
Well, Nikita Kucherov's the guy there, Steve, that's been on an absolute roll. I think the last time I checked, he was second in the entire National Hockey League in goals, and he's been on a heck of a roll. This is a team that's been decimated by injuries. I mean, they're right there in the playoffs, but, injuries, they're just the facts. There's no excuses, but they've done a heck of a job to give themselves a chance to get in.
Haven't they lost three centers?
Yeah. They've been... like I said, it's been a battle for them for a long time. But they play a fun game. They play a lot like they like to play like the Blackhawks do, right? A puck possession, push to pace type of game. But when you have all these injuries, it's tough to do that with a lot of young players. But that's one guy to keep an eye on or listen to on GN Radio tonight with Troy and Johnny when they're when we're all doing the game here tonight.
How lucky are you, by the way? Look at the guys you work with too. It's unbelievable. I mean, they're walking around talking about how lucky they are to work with Eddie. But is there a better guy than Doc Emrick anywhere?
If there is, I'd like for somebody to, tap me on the shoulder. Look, I mean, two incredible guys with the great Pat Foley and Doc Emrick, and to be their partners. I mean, look, and I've said this to you before, Steve. It's a very intimidating chair to sit in and night out. It is, because you're sitting with Hall of Famers. You're sitting with legends. You're sitting with people that when they hear the tones of Pat Foley and Doc Emrick, I mean, they think hockey. They think of, greatness. And for me, that's why I got to try to bring my A game every night. And I think we have a great chemistry, both Pat and I, obviously, and Doc and I, who are not only broadcasting, partners, but they're great friends and people that I trust and depend on in a lot of different areas. So yeah, I'm a lucky guy to be able to sit next to two Hall of Famers every night, and hopefully people enjoy the broadcast regardless of the outcome each and every night.
Everybody's talking about the Final Four, as you know, and that gets the most hype. But you want to see a collection of teams and some future NHL stars. The Frozen Four is in Chicago April 6th and April 8th, and you'll get a chance to see Denver University, top seed in the nation, second seed University of Minnesota, Duluth, third seed at Harvard, and out of nowhere, Notre Dame, unranked, has made the Frozen Four as well. And there's a couple of Hawks prospects in there.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think the job that John McDonough, Jay Blanc, Pete Hassan, and everybody in that Blackhawk office to get the Final Four, and you think about it, we have the NHL draft coming too in June, so the hockey world is coming to the city of Chicago, and it becomes the hockey mecca because you get four prestigious universities coming to the United Center. I know they're going to have great crowds. It's going to be entertaining. Look, if you can get your hands on tickets, you want to be entertained. It is a great event.
And I'm sure the United Center and the NCAA, and obviously with the Blackhawks' help, will put on a great weekend of hockey. So tip of the hockey helmet to everybody involved. And, yeah, you can come and see future Blackhawks and see future players in a National Hockey League. And it'll be a great weekend. So hopefully everybody will get a chance to check it out, whether it's on TV or in person. And then you got the draft coming in June. So and playoff hockey coming. So you got a lot of hockey coming at the United Center here, and both on the ice and when it comes to the NHL draft.
Yeah, and look for Blake Hillman at Denver and Dennis Gilbert at Notre Dame in Hawks sweaters down the road. Dave, before we give Andre the final question, any last thoughts?
Well, I guess you're at a point now where you've seen these teams a lot. Eddie, is it okay to feel comfortable now about the Blackhawks with a 7-point lead on Minnesota with 7 to go? And I know Minnesota will have a game in hand after tonight, but right now they're all even in games played.
Yeah, look, I still think, David, that, the Blackhawks obviously, they control, their own destiny, and you can start doing the math and the magic numbers and stuff. But I think most importantly, and we've touched on this in the broadcast, it's how they're playing, right? I mean, yeah, the outcome is important, yes, but it's how they're playing. Like, you can play really well and lose, and I think you'd probably be, probably as thrilled if you won a game and you didn't play very well, and the Hawks have had a couple of those. So, I mean, they're in a little bit of a funk, and so are Minnesota. So is San Jose. I mean, it's wide open. The Blackhawks could play anybody come the first round of the playoffs if they sit. I mean, obviously if they sit in that number one spot, but right. It is absolutely wide open. But for me, David, I think that it's how they're playing going into the playoffs, and the past speaks for itself with the leadership and the coaching that this team has when the puck drops for real in the second week of April.
Andre, we're short on time here, but get your final question.
Yeah, in the interest of time, I'll save my good question for the next time, or I'll just ask Eddie in private. But, Edzo, you're looking ahead to the Derby. Are you going to be going this year?
Oh, yeah. I'll be there.
Okay, good.
I'll be there couple of days early, try to get my work on, and hopefully you can convince Steve maybe to have me on maybe a day or two before the Derby, and maybe we can
you
talk
bet.
A little horses there,
Absolutely. We'll prognosticate the Oaks and the Derby. Looking forward to it. Bye,
it's unbelievable. You're the best and the worst all at the same time.
Well, that's not really that. That's not the first time that I've heard that. There, I understand you've been a little under the weather there, Steve. So I hope you're feeling better, man.
I'm feeling good, buddy. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming back on. Thank you, bud.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
9:12 in the morning, 720 WGN. It is the Steve Cochran Show. Steve sounded good.
He did.
He'll be back with us tomorrow. Fingers crossed for the full show. He's recovering from, his incident, blood clot in his lung. Very serious, but he's going to be okay, and we look forward to seeing him back in studio tomorrow.
We wouldn't be doing this segment if it wasn't for Steve Cochran.
Boy, I tell you, we're about to, and I'm going to just say it confidently, we're about to adopt a puppy.
Yes!
Our record is flawless, right? I say R.
Just
because
about.
We all
you say 14 and 0?
Something like the last 14 or 15, wow. We've adopted out. No pressure or anything.
Our record is flawless so far. So, yes, and we thank you, Steve Dale. You're in studio today with some of your friends, furry and not so furry, which we're so thrilled to have you here. All right, tell us about the puppy. Tell us about why we're here today. And this is a really cool story, too.
It is. And it's both a sad story and a heroic story all at once. So, dogs are still being kept for dinner, not to join you, but to eat in South Korea.
In some countries,
yeah.
South
and Korea. It's so horrific to even think about. But even worse, if it can be, are the conditions these dogs are kept in. And some of them have been rescued by Humane Society International over the course of the last year plus. To bring awareness as well as to save individual dogs, and they partner with different organizations around the country. One of those organizations is Magnificent Mutts Rescue, and Linda Littrell is the founder of the organization, and she's right here. And I think I'll let you, Linda, pick up where I left off.
Good morning.
Morning, Linda.
So what Magnificent Mutts Rescue does, we're one of the partners for the Humane Society International. when the Humane Society goes over there and closes a dog meat farm, they ask their rescue partners if they can assist in taking in the rescue dogs, take them in, socialize them, et cetera, get them.
And eventually get them adopted out. Tell us about
make them comfortable, too.
Yeah, but I think it's important to know, we've all heard the term puppy mill, and that's essentially what the conditions are for these dogs, maybe even if it can be worse. I'm not sure it can be, but maybe even worse. Explain what... This is a dog named Cinta, by the way. A beautiful dog, kind of a Spitz-looking, Akita-looking dog, but much smaller than your Akita. How much does Cinta weigh?
She's 20 pounds right now.
Uh-huh. And about 2 years old, maybe less, actually, young dog. Not necessarily an overly active dog, but like a lot of the young dogs, does have some energy. This dog, though, will chill, loves attention, is still learning how to be a dog, which we'll get to in a moment, kind of shy around new circumstances, new people, because of the way this dog was brought up. And dogs are incredible that they can adjust, period. So describe the conditions this dog was kept in.
Well, they're kept in small cages. It's very dark. It's very smelly, high ammonia levels, urine and feces.
Horrible conditions.
I mean, it's
deplorable.
Yeah. I mean, these cages are kept on top of one another, so gravity is gravity. So when the dogs piddle on top, I don't have to say anymore. No one cleans up after them. They get no veterinary attention and very, very, very little human attention.
It's kind of like dog jail.
It worse. Really is. Yeah. And they're only fed to be kept alive, essentially. Yeah. I mean, it's horrible. And to have a dog come from that situation to understand how to be a dog, which is what Cinta is learning now. So Cinta's foster mom is here. They have two other dogs, and the best teacher in the family has not been Cinta's foster mom, but instead the other two dogs that Cinta is watching and learning, I can be a dog too. Oh, this is what play looks like? Oh, this looks fun. I'm going to do this.
So Cinta might be good in a home where there is another dog.
Absolutely.
Maybe kind of to be its doggy mentor.
Nicely put. Right.
Now, why are you looking at me
I'm
when
just
you're
thinking,
saying
Dave. I'm just thinking out loud.
Well, we might consider that. Linda, are these farms, are they regulated at all, or is it
no.
is this just strict?
Not at all.
Okay, so there's this is not a mainstream thing. This is something that's really a form of abuse of these dogs.
Well, it was mainstream at one time in South Korea, and the good news is because of awareness. So one of the differences, so it's good that we're saving individual dogs, no doubt about that. But the other factor is the awareness that me being on the radio talking about this, these dogs coming to the U.S. is creating, and that awareness is really a factor in shutting these places down. And to the Humane Society's credit, they don't go in there and just say, we want to shut you down. I don't know legally if they could do that or not in South Korea, but what they do is they say, we're going to find you, the farmer, an alternative source of income. We can do better than this. And that's actually now changing the world, if you will. But still, it's estimated that about 2 million dogs are at these facilities in South Korea.
It is getting better, though, right?
Yes.
Because you said, you know, you were alluding to the partnership that there is now. And will they kind of call you now ahead of time? And, you know, instead of the alternative, which is death, will they call you and say, you know what, we have a couple of dogs here?
Yes.
Instead of just putting the dogs down.
Right. They have several partners that they work with. Yeah. I generally work with them once a year. I'll take in South Korean dogs when they're closing down a dog meat farm. That's what we do. We save lives. We want to teach these dogs to become a dog and to live a nice life.
Yeah. This is a beautiful, beautiful dog.
Gorgeous dog.
When she came in, she's medium size. I thought, she was a golden retriever. And then when she turned toward you, she kind of has that little terrier face look to her, too.
Well, but I think just more Akita. I think,
Akita,
like you said,
yeah,
Steve, I think.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful dog, though. And what a great disposition.
And these are typical of South Korean dogs, as far as the look goes. And yes, a great disposition, loves to sit and be petted, which is what's happening now. But, you know, I just got a text. Maybe you got the same text, Andrea, that I want to be petted by Dave Ennett. Cinta sent the text.
Cinta, wow, yes, really smart.
Who doesn't, Steve? Who doesn't, right?
So this is what we are going to see now, I believe, and on TV
here we go.
You'll be able to see this too.
All right.
Which means the dog will be adopted.
That's
out.
Right. That's right. So for our friends, at CLTV, you're watching Dave Ennett now. He would normally be doing the play-by-play, but Dave Ennett. Always, he has a puppy himself. He has a dog. We're always trying to get him to adopt another dog, and he is trying to. Well, now he's laying on the ground petting the puppy.
You are doing
and
play
let me
by
just say
play
one thing.
Dave
and
a petting.
When right back me up. When Cinta first came in, Cinta kind of looks around, makes you know, is kind of aware
yes.
of her surroundings, and sat down and had to smell all of our hands before we pet her, and is just loving Dave Ennett now. What a warm. Personality she has.
I don't know that she's loving. She's kind of scared.
We're loving
she's
watching
tolerating
you.
Tolerating it, and look how trusting dogs are.
Yes.
And this dog is learning now by experience that people can be good. And after this dog's experiences, I mean, if you had experienced what this dog has experienced, I don't know that I would be able to turn around on a flash like that, and in a matter of weeks, thanks to the foster mom, thanks to the foster mom's dogs, this dog, Cinta, has turned around, and it's quite incredible. And by the way, due to my blog post, there's interest in this dog already. That's at stevedale.tv, but you have others.
We do, and there's so many more, and we're going to hear about some other puppies, too. We're going to learn more about Cinta and maybe what kind of an environment would be perfect for her, but we are going to adopt this dog. I have a feeling we're going to adopt her today.
I know we are.
So we'll have more with Steve Dale and the beautiful Cinta right after this on 720 WGN.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window?
Welcome back to the Cinta Hour here on WGN and the Steve Cochran Show. Dave Ennett, Andrea Darlis for Steve. And Steve Dale is here along with some friends, including Cinta, who I've gotten to know a little bit now. And what a sweet dog. Just a wonderful disposition. You
know,
can tell,
yes,
can't you, Steve, right away?
Yeah. I know this dog will be fine. This dog will need time to adjust, several weeks, maybe even a couple of months, you know, really. But considering, again, what this dog has been through, you would be a hero for not only rescuing this dog, but if this dog is, and this dog may be taken by the time we're done with the show, if that happens, you have other dogs, Linda.
Yes, we still, we have other dogs, but specifically too, we have four more South Korean dogs.
Do they all have this kind of Cinta look?
No. Julie looks like Cinta, but she's black.
Okay.
Is Julie the, never mind. Is that the dog? Or...
Julie's the dog.
Is that Jules, aka Julie?
Yes.
Are you on the website?
Looking on the website.
I'm on the website,
I love how you can see the pictures on the website, too.
Yes.
That's really nice.
And then we have Petra, who looks a lot like Cinta. And then we have Roser. He's a Mastiff mix.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Len, who's a Great Dane.
Len.
That's a great name for a dog. Who names the dogs? Do you guys just collectively kind of say this looks like a Len?
Actually, HSI named them for, you know, their health certificates.
Okay.
So we just kept the names.
That's
just
great.
To keep everything.
I like Ringo Starr.
Ringo's
I like
available,
him too.
Too.
And Paul McCartney. Oh, wait. You're talking to the dogs now. This is so adorable.
There are some really cute. Now, how many of them are from Korea? Are all these? Not all these dogs have come from there, are they?
No, only the ones that we have left are Cinta, Roser, Julie, Len, and Petra.
And where do you generally get your other dogs from?
The United States, Puerto Rico, Beirut, Lebanon, and Doha, Qatar.
Boy, this is such a beautiful dog. What type of environment would you see for Cinta? I know she likes other dogs. How about kids? Does she want to be outside? What type of environment?
We were talking about cats also before we went on the air.
Cinta would do well in a home that has another confident dog to help her grow and get her confidence. Older kids would be all right. A fenced yard would be ideal, but not necessary. Right now, Cinta would excel in a more quiet household and someone who's going to be patient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but this will work out. Cinta is a wonderful dog. And again, considering everything Cinta's been through, the other thing that whoever adopts this dog will have going for him or her or for the family is that Cinta's young. Cinta's not even 2 years old. So, well, if it were a 12-year-old dog, it could still work out. This is easier. The dog isn't even two.
That's
so.
Right.
Wendy Snyder texted, "What a cutie." So,
oh, thank you,
Wendy.
You
might have to fight her, Dave.
My wife texted the same thing.
They were talking about me, weren't they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely,
of course,
Steve.
Of course. You guys, thank you so much, as always. One more time, I'll give the website and the information if somebody wants to adopt Cinta.
The website is magnificentmutts.org. Look us up, send us an email, and we'll be in touch.
Cinta's going to go.
Yeah,
I'm telling
you. You guys are magnificent.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you, Steve Dale, for all the tireless work you do, for our furried friends.
And thank you, Cinta.
Bye, Cinta.
Thank you, Cinta.
Bye, Cinta.
Bye, Cinta.
We're back after this. It's the Steve Cochran Show on WGN. Nine 9:41 in the morning, 7:20 WGN. It's the Steve Cochran Show. Steve back for the full show tomorrow. We're covering at home. And we are going to talk a little Final Four. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10 o'clock. Boy, I'm excited. Yeah.
Because you're like Ms. Prognosticator at WGN Radio.
I got lucky. And I picked completely by my heart.
Don't say that. Just say I knew this
was going to
happen.
I knew this was going to happen.
What, that the Ducks were going to be there?
I have the Ducks winning it all because, well, I have to, again, it's all heart. My goddaughter and her brother, their dad, went to Oregon, and every time I see them, they say, go Ducks, go Ducks. Oh, yeah. So I did it for them, and I like their yellow uniforms.
You know, we do a family bowl pool every year. Uh-huh. Every member of the family makes their picks, and we go through all the, 58 bowl games. We go through, we pick the winners in each one.
Yeah.
Everybody puts in like $5 or whatever. The first year we did it, my mom, who was not much of a sports fan, didn't know a lot about sports, she won it because she just went through it and she picked the names of states that she'd visited or something.
Yeah, she had a theme.
As long as you come up with some kind of a theme. So I'm thinking, okay, you have the Oregon connection there.
Right.
So that's a great pick to get Oregon into your Final Four.
I know. I picked Oregon. I still have North Carolina. I picked them because they always win. And Gonzaga, everybody said they were going to be great this year. And Florida, because it's someplace that I would kind of like to retire someday. Florida or Arizona, but I can't pick Arizona because 2005. No, I couldn't pick them early on because...
The game.
Yeah, they have that rivalry with Illinois. I always go back to 2005. I don't live in the past, but...
Yeah, but
I
wait
do
a minute.
That
but,
one.
But Illinois had the last laugh
I
on that.
I know.
Deal.
How great was that?
Yeah, so there's no rivalry there if Illinois won.
And I can't ever pick Kansas because Bill Self.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't pick... what's the other team? Duke. Because they always win. And I like Coach K. He's local. He's great. But I just can't pick Duke. I just can't bring myself to. And I know everybody likes Duke, and that's great.
Okay, so again, your Final Four.
My Final Four, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I had picked South Carolina. Or rather, I had picked Florida, and South Carolina beat them. And then I picked Gonzaga and North Carolina. Now, how about you?
I had, as I mentioned before, I didn't do a bracket this year because I was broadcasting games.
Oh.
I didn't want to put myself in that situation.
I understand. But the brackets that we do here are for pride.
Oh, I understand.
And just for, so we can say, yes, we won.
Oh, I totally get that. Now, I will admit, after watching Gonzaga, I came away impressed by them. I watched them play two games out in Salt Lake City, including the win over Northwestern. But I also thought that they were a team that definitely, they're not a perfect team.
No.
They could be had. And I thought for a while, West Virginia kind of, I thought they would put a little more pressure on them than they ended up doing. And then Xavier made a run at them in the second half, kind of like Northwestern did. But they just couldn't quite get over the hump.
I know, again, you can't look back, but how Northwestern played, I think, especially at the end of that game, they played their hearts out. How cool would it be if we had Northwestern in the Final Four?
Well, they played Gonzaga better than anybody else has so far. So.
Well, who was the only team that beat Gonzaga? Because they're, what,
36? Brigham Young.
It was
their last regular season game. It was senior night. And Brigham Young's beaten them like...
Senior night and they lost?
Senior night
awful.
At home. But Brigham Young's beaten them like 3 years in a row. So for some reason, sometimes... teams get another team's number, and it's hard to explain, but Brigham Young has certainly had their number.
Do you see more interest this year? I mean, this is arguably one of the greatest times of the year for sports, mm-hmm. especially college sports. I mean, this is great, March Madness. Do you see more interest this year or less?
In the tournament?
Yeah.
I think so. I think the tournament needs to have compelling matchups early in the tournament. I think that you saw some games that were kind of interesting. Northwestern Vanderbilt's a great example. That probably was the story of the first two rounds of the tournament. But you need games like you had the other night. That Wisconsin game was, I mean, that was an unbelievable game late Friday night. I don't know how many people were still up watching that game at Madison Square Garden, that overtime game with Florida. I mean, that was a great game. The game yesterday, North Carolina, Kentucky, tremendous game. You'd expect that, two of the most storied programs in college basketball. But I think a lot of people tune into the tournament looking for those buzzer beaters, those crazy finishes. I don't think there have been that many this year. There have been some,
right,
like Wisconsin the other night. But
and not too many upsets. I love the years when, you know, the 15 seed beats, what would it be, the 2?
The 2 and the 15.
Right,
and
I love
there
those.
There weren't too many of those.
There weren't many of those this year. Were you surprised that there were 7 Big Ten teams who made the tournament and not ones in the Final Four?
No, because I think if you look at it, I think the one that surprised me was Purdue. I thought Purdue had a chance to go further, and Kansas, when Kansas was on in that game.
I know. You can say Kansas. It's okay.
No.
I like Kansas.
I'm supposed to be happy. But Kansas was really on, and that was, I mean, I'm just surprised Purdue didn't play better. But I'm not sure any team would have beaten Kansas that night. That's how good Kansas was. But, of course, then they turn around and lose their next game. But, you know, I think all the teams the Big Ten sent, to a certain extent, had – I thought Wisconsin would get past that game on Friday.
I thought so, too. You know, I really thought Wisconsin would.
They're sort of a team that always plays their best in the postseason.
Yeah.
And they did. I mean, they lose on a great shot at the buzzer.
I know.
It's not like they got blown out.
Here's one for you. Have you ever had so many controversial last-second calls, including the Northwestern game?
Yeah, I mean, I think you always get a few of those. I know that yesterday there were some controversial calls yesterday in the Kentucky-North Carolina game, mm-hmm. for instance. Mm-hmm. But I that's all part of it. I mean, everybody's got to deal with that. But, you mentioned last weekend, in the Northwestern-Gonzaga game, the missed call on the goaltend.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was crazy. But what are you going to, hindsight's 20/20, I guess.
Until you have robots doing the officiating, you're going to have missed calls.
And even then, there'll be some sort of IT problem.
That's right.
But so Final Four coming up, and the championship game is a week from today, right?
Final Four, the championship game is next Monday night. The semifinals start at 5 o'clock Saturday, the two games.
Yeah.
And I think they'll be great games. I mean, I'm looking forward to the matchups. I think they'll be really entertaining.
We'll have a presence there, WGN Radio.
Yes, Sam Panayotovich will be covering the games.
Covering the games for us. All right, cool. We'll finish up Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.
.951, 720 WGN, the Steve Cochran Show. Wrapping things up for Monday. Steve will be back tomorrow for the full show starting at 6 a.m. bright and early. Bill and Wendy coming up at 10. And we have major, major news. Do we have this word just in? This is big. From the entertainment industry.
This is huge.
We turn to our special entertainment correspondent live in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Here's Andrea Darlis.
Dave, I am standing in front of the Mann's Chinese Theater, formerly known as Mann's, now the Grauman's Chinese Theater, along the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Mm-hmm. Hollywood has a new power couple.
Ooh.
And?
Brad Pitt.
No.
And
any guesses, any thoughts? Who would a Brad Pitt date?
He's back with Angelina.
Scarlett Johansson?
No, but that's a good guess. And no, he's not back with Angelina.
He's got to date like an independent type of woman.
How about Sandra Bullock? Yes. Things between Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt have already calmed down. They're back on speaking terms, and a new report from Yahoo News claiming that the Fight Club star and Sandra Bullock have started dating.
That's good.
Guess who arranged their hookup?
Oh.
Ooh, maybe I should say their date.
George Clooney.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. George Clooney, who is mutual friends with both. He's very tight with Sandra Bullock.
So
tight with Brad Pitt. I'm not making this up.
So Brad Pitt needs George Clooney to fix him up with Sandra Bullock?
Well, yep. George Clooney, apparently,
Dave.
It's all according to Yahoo News. George Clooney and Brad Pitt were out or conversing or something, and Clooney thought that the pair would make a great couple. So Sandra Bullock and Brad Pitt attended Clooney's charity a couple of years ago. They got along so well during the event that Clooney thought, this might work out. So no official confirmation that they are a couple now, but they have gone out a few times.
I like Sandra Bullock.
I do too.
Don't you think?
I love her.
I mean, she would be a fun person.
She's wonderful. I could see hanging out with her. Mm-hmm. She's cool. Plus, she's so generous.
Who was she married to?
That Jesse James with the tattoos.
Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah. That's
and
right.
Then wasn't she married to somebody before him? I forget who she was married to.
Well, you're the entertainment reporter. You
I
know.
Let me ask a few people along the Hollywood Walk of Fame here. I think it was, I don't want to say Billy Bob Thornton, but she was with someone.
Oh, no.
And then Jesse James.
That was Angelina.
And then Jesse James cheated on her. Oh. So I think that would be a great couple. Another power couple, right?
What?
Or you don't care?
I'm looking up her.
No, I do care.
You just don't care, do you?
I do care. I mean, this is your big story.
But wait, I mean, I just read the People and I didn't see anything about that. It was just talking about Brad and how he's just moving on.
I'm so behind on my People.
Blah, blah, blah.
I'm still on the Prince issue. Not from when Prince died, but they just did Maite, his girlfriend, kind of did an expose and talked about their life together. And, you know, they had a child who passed away. That's how far behind on People I am.
Mary and I both read this week's edition about Richard Simmons.
Yeah, which was really an odd article.
Just strange.
We didn't learn anything other than that he's burned out and he's, you know, back at home and hasn't been seen in 3 years.
That's it. That's all we know about him, right?
Oh, well, by the way, Jesse James was, I believe, the only husband she had. Yes.
Okay. Who'd she date, Mary? Ask some of those other people since you're out here with me.
She has her little three-and-a-half-year-old baby girl, Layla.
In Hollywood. And she's adopting another, I think, as well, another child. So, between the two of them, they'll have 8 kids.
Have we heard yet if Cinta has been adopted?
I don't know. Cinta's not been adopted yet. Okay. You're worried about Cinta.
I want to make sure Cinta finds a home by the end of the day.
Cinta is the puppy dog that we had in studio here with Steve Dale earlier this hour. And go to our website, WGNradio.com, and the Steve Cochran Show Facebook page, and you can see a picture of Cinta.
Beautiful dog.
And adopt her. Hey, we should adopt her for Brad and Sandra. Could be
a little housewarming
gift. Yeah.
Well, okay, we're kind of advancing the relationship. You're there. I mean, you're there in Hollywood.
Hollywood's too chaotic for poor little Cinta, I think.
Let me leave Hollywood and come back now. Okay, yes. Live from the Hollywood Walk of Fame in Los Angeles, California, I'm me.
That was great. That was a great report.
That was a shocker. So, I am shocked that they're dating. I mean, I'm not shocked, but, you know, it's a good couple. I like it.
A whirlwind flight and a whirlwind romance. We'll keep you updated on the, what are we going to call them? Bullock.
Pitbull. Pitbull.
Pitbull.
Oh, yeah. Nice, Mare.
There we go. Ties in with the theme. Perfect.
There we go.
Bill and Wendy next on WGN.